flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
While I was walking down the beach one bright and sunny day, I saw a great big wooden box a-floating in the bay. I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, I picked it up and ran to town as happy as a king. I took it to a guy I knew who'd buy most anything. But this is what he hollered at me as I walked in his shop. Ooh, get out of here with that before I call a cop. Ooh, get out of here with that before I call a cop. I turned around and got right out of running for my life. And then I took it home with me to give it to my wife. But this is what she hollered at me as I walked in the door. Oh, get out of here with that, and don't come back no more. Oh, get out of here with that, and don't come back no more. I wandered all around the town until I chanced to meet a hobo who was looking for a handout on the street. He said he'd take most any old thing, he was a desperate man. But when I showed him the, he turned around and ran. Oh, when I showed him the, he turned around and ran. I wandered on for many years, a victim of my fate, until one day I came upon St. Peter at the gate. And when I tried to take it inside, he told me where to go. Get out of here with that, and take it down below. Oh, get out of here with that, and take it down below. The moral of the story is, if you're out on the beach, and you should see a great big box and it's within your reach, don't ever stop and open it up. That's my advice to you, 'cause you'll never get rid of them, no matter what you do. Oh, you'll never get rid of them, no matter what you do.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, we have two great shows for you. We begin with a wonderful episode of The Whistler. I always liked The Whistler. It started in 1942, went all the way up to about 1955. It eventually graduated to TV, and they actually used the same radio scripts many times that they used. They used that on TV that they had on the radio. The wonderful thing about The Whistler is that you always know who the bad guy is, but there's always a surprise ending too. It's something like Alfred Hitchcock on the radio, and I think you'll really enjoy it. The second mystery we're going to listen to tonight comes from the Inner Sanctum series. This series started in the during World War II, and it went all the way through to the early 50s. Then later on, the man who created the Inner Sanctum series, Hyman Brown, went and brought back the CBS Mystery Theater, and that brought back radio drama big time. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and answer your queries, and I'll try to get on the radio what you want to hear. Again, just have a fantastic weekend, and now let's enjoy our great shows.
And now The Whistler's strange story. Package for Emily.
As the gray convertible raced along the storm-darkened country road, Vivian Sedgwick leaned forward at the wheel, peered through the rain pounding against the windshield. Her arms ached from the strain of steady, relentless driving. but not once did she slacken her speed. Even as the car skidded around the curve, turned into the main highway that ran parallel to the railroad tracks, her foot remained on the accelerator, down as far as it would go. Nervously, she glanced at the clock on the dashboard. It was almost 3 o'clock. 4 hours since she left Evergreen Lodge in Lake Arrowhead. 4 long, harrowing hours. If she kept up this speed, she could reach Porter's Crossing by 3:20. And then it would be only a matter of minutes to Portertown and finally Sedgwick House. Yes, she had to be home by 3:30. And as her car raced on, Vivian found it difficult to believe that only yesterday morning, she'd been a very happy young woman, busily packing for her Lake Arrowhead trip. Yes, yesterday morning there was even a song on her lips.
Always. Lum, da, 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 dee,
you da, want the red shoes, Miss Vivian?
Hmm? Oh, yes, and the sandals too, please, Bessie.
Lum, da, 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 dee, you know, Miss Vivian, la, 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 that's an interesting coincidence.
Hmm?
The song you're humming.
What?
When Dr. Thorpe comes to call, seems I hear him whistling the same tune.
Well, you've a good memory, Bessie. Perhaps that's why you're the best maid we've ever had at Sedgwick House.
Could it be that Dr. Thorpe is going away for a trip, too?
You're also the most inquisitive maid we've ever had.
Oh, I'm so happy for you, Miss Vivian.
Oh, hand me that robe, will you, Bessie?
Yes, and here it is. I do hope you're going someplace that's real, real dreamy-like.
Well, I guess you can call it that. A friend of mine has a charming place at Lake Arrowhead. She asked us both out for a week.
I'm glad Dr. Thorpe will be able to get away from the hospital for a spell. Goodness, the way he's been driving himself lately, not eating properly.
Oh, the poor darling has been overworking. But you wait and see, Bessie. One of these days he'll be appreciated. He'll have a clinic of his own, a real clinic, the kind he keeps talking about. Well, there, that's that. You get my beige coat, Bessie, please. And the scarf, too, the brown one.
Yes, ma'am.
And Bessie?
Yes, ma'am.
After I leave, will you tell Miss Emily I'll be away for a week?
I already have, Miss Vivian, last night.
Oh. What did she say?
She didn't say a thing. Not a thing.
That's not like her.
Vivian! Vivian!
You'd best go to her, miss.
Yes. Take these things downstairs, will you, Bessie? I'll be down shortly.
The gaiety that filled your heart only a few moments ago is suddenly frozen. Yes, the bittersweet sound of Emily's voice can do that, can't it, Vivian? Reluctantly, you walk down the hall to her room. Emily, your stepmother, slightly older, much more beautiful than you, infinitely more dangerous. The woman who turned your father's life into a nightmare until finally he found escape by suicide. Now, the power of wealth, the Sedgwick fortune, is hers. Emily can buy anything she wants. Even the one thing you want most, Dr. Kenneth Thorpe. That's why you've got to get him away from Emily for just a week and make him yours. Nothing must prevent that. Nothing. Emily is sitting up in bed, reading. She looks up, even with a weak heart that almost makes for an invalid. She's a beautiful woman, isn't she, Vivian?
What is it, Emily?
I'm expecting my package of sedatives this morning. Will you see if the mail has come?
You could have called Bessie to do that, Emily.
Of course. But I assume she was rather busy getting your things together for your little trip.
Oh, how I envy you, darling. The mountains are delightful this time of year. And Evergreen Lodge at Lake Arrowhead. An enchanting place, really. Too bad you can't join us, Emily.
I can't tell you how happy I am that the hospital finally gave Kenneth this free time.
Been eavesdropping again, have you?
1 week up there at the lodge, with you, will make a different man out of Kenneth. Won't it, darling?
There's no danger of what you're thinking, Emily. He'll make it.
How nice. How very, very nice. Now you'll be able to discuss your dreams of the future together. Kenneth with his new clinic, and you, his noble wife, tidying up shop, bringing new little doctors into the world. You can't stand it, Kathy. My father's out of the way. You have his house, his money. But that still isn't enough for your empty little life, is it?
Darling, your fangs are showing.
Whenever I'm near you, Emily, I like to dress for the occasion. You'd like some of that money for yourself, wouldn't you, darling? So you could buy Kenneth his dream, his clinic. That would be one way of getting him. I don't have to win his love that way.
Then what is your technique? Being his sweet, adorable girl who uses all the advertised products?
Emily, you know I've loved Kenneth all my life.
Then I should think you've had more than your share. Now it's my turn to love him the rest of my life. Oh, dear, it's probably that horrid Mrs. Fenway. She said... Oh. Hello? Well, hello. We were just this minute talking about you, Kenneth, darling.
I'll take it, Emily.
I was so delighted to hear about your little vacation. Oh, you'll love it up there.
I said I'll take it, Emily.
Oh, yes. Yes, you see, Kenneth, just a moment. He wants to talk to you, Vivian.
Thank you. Hello, Kenneth.
Vivian, I had to call you right away. The most wonderful thing has happened.
Oh, what, Ken?
Well, it's just unbelievable. I can't go into too much detail now, but the clinic, Vivian. I'm getting my clinic.
The clinic? Oh, that is wonderful, Kenneth. But who? I mean, how did it happen?
Well, the funny part of it is I don't know. A guardian angel, I'd say, offhand. You know how some of these millionaires are. I like to stay behind the scenes.
Yes. Yes, I know. But how is it that you were chosen?
Well, I haven't been. Not exactly, anyway. First off, I've got to submit a formal report on what I think a modern clinic should be like. Have to start on it right away.
Right away? You mean the trip you...
Afraid so. I'll have to cancel it, Vivian.
Oh, but couldn't you work on the report up at the lodge? It's an ideal place, really. I could do the typing.
No, Vivian. I'm afraid it's out of the question. I really should stay here in the event something pops suddenly. Why don't you go on ahead?
Oh, Kenneth, you promised. You promised nothing would interfere with this vacation.
Yes, I know, but... Vivian, I can't risk the chance of a lifetime for a week in the mountains.
No, of course. Of course, I'm sorry, Ken.
Look, I've got to run along now. I'll call you at the lodge in a day or so, huh?
Yes. Yes, do that, Kenneth.
Bye.
Ken?
Our little vacation's been spoiled, hasn't it, darling?
Your grief overwhelms me, Emily.
Now, darling.
I'm even more overwhelmed by your split-second timing.
What in the world are you talking about?
You honestly think you have a chance, don't you? You think you can get him away from me by buying him his clinic?
If Kenneth has been given a clinic of his own, this is the first I've heard of it.
It's a clever device, Emily. Keeping your magnanimous gift a secret. Oh, yes, let him be grateful first. Blindly grateful. And then at the right psychological moment, tell him he owes it all to you.
Really, Vivian, aren't you...
You don't deny it, do you, Emily?
Kenneth is a very desirable specimen of American manhood, darling. Think if I made up my mind, I might do anything to have him for myself.
Listen, Emily. You've taken everything from me. But you won't take him. I'm warning you. For all your charms, all your subtleties... You'll never get him away from me, do you understand? Never.
Back in your own room, you stand by the window, trembling with rage. The fury inside you, your hatred for Emily, mounts steadily. And then a figure at the front gate attracts your eye. The postman. And you watch him drop a small package into the box. Yes, Vivian. It's the package Emily is expecting. The harmless sedatives mailed from a chemical laboratory in the city. Suddenly your heart skips a beat. You stand there, staring out across the grounds, and a plan begins to form in your mind. Quickly you turn and run from the room. Moments later, you're in the downstairs hall, hastily throwing a raincoat over your shoulders. You open the front door and go to the mailbox. Yes, there it is. With a package safely hidden in your coat pocket, you return to the house.
Miss Vivian?
Oh, Bessie.
I was just about to go out for the mail.
I already have it.
Was there something for Miss Emily?
No, just a letter. For me.
But didn't Miss Emily's package of sedatives arrive?
No. Miss Emily's package didn't arrive.
Decision, haven't you, Vivian? In a split second, it all occurred to you. The moment you saw the mailman drop the package into the mailbox. The package of harmless sedatives for Emily. You knew you had to kill her. As you climb the long, narrow stairs to the turret, high above the rest of the house, to your father's den, you're certain it's the only way you can prevent Emily taking Kenneth Thorpe away from you. Inside the small room, you hurry to the desk, unlock it. And from the far corner of the lower drawer, you remove a small bottle labeled poison. You unscrew the top. A small white pill rolls out into your palm. One of the pills your father bought the night he killed himself. For a moment, you stare at it. Wonder why you've saved it. Wonder if perhaps you've saved it for yourself. Or because someday you knew you'd give it to Emily.
Who is it?
Bessie, Miss Vivian.
Oh, come in, Bessie.
I was just wondering, will you be going up to Evergreen Lodge after all? Miss Emily seemed to think you'd changed your mind.
Of course I'm going. I haven't changed my plans in the least. Not in the least.
The moment Bessie leaves, your hands move swiftly, surely, unwrapping Emily's package, removing the bottle of sedatives. In a matter of minutes, you've emptied the contents of one of the sedative capsules at the top of the box and refilled it with the same deadly ingredients that took your father's life years before. You know the nature of the poison, that it doesn't lose its strength, and you feel strangely exultant as you think of Emily going in the very same way. And it's going to be simple, isn't it? Only a matter of rewrapping the package, applying the same address label after you've steamed it off the original package, and then remailing it. Yes, Vivian, the postmark, everything must be the same. Emily's package must arrive in perfect condition.
Oh, Miss Vivian, you're leaving now?
Yes, Bessie.
Have a pleasant time at Arrowhead.
Oh, I will, I'm sure. Bessie.
Yes, ma'am?
Say goodbye to Miss Emily for me.
An hour later, as you reach Los Angeles and drive toward the chemical laboratory that sent Emily's prescription, the freshly wrapped package with the laboratory's label on it is on the seat beside you. You park the car, enter the establishment unnoticed, and drop Emily's package into the mail chute. And that's all. The Los Angeles postmark will be on it now. Everything perfect. By late tomorrow afternoon, the package will be in Emily's hands. Now you can forget it. Put it out of your mind as you get back in the car and drive on to Arrowhead.
Vivian, darling. Thanks. I was about to give you up. So glad you could make it, dear.
Well, the roads were rather bad. I had to drive slowly.
Oh, I thought you might have got mixed up, taking the road that led back through the city.
No. No, Florence, I came directly here.
Here, let me take your bag. Oh, you're alone? I thought your nice doctor friend was coming.
Oh, he couldn't get away.
Oh, too bad. Well, bear up. There'll be a big gang over tomorrow. I promise you won't be lonely. How's Emily?
Why, She's fine, Florence.
I know. Sorry I asked. Look, darling, while you're here, you just forget about her, understand? Promise?
Oh, I wish I could, Florence, but I...
Just do it, that's all. Now I'll show you your room. Upstairs, darling. Goodness, I'll bet you're dead tired.
Yes, I am. The driving all afternoon. I'd like to rest a while.
Of course, darling. A nap before dinner and you'll be as fresh as a daisy. I just made that up. Come along.
Vivian.
Come in, Florence.
Dinner will be ready in about... Well, what in the world are you doing sitting here in the dark? Thought you were going to take a nap.
Well, I just couldn't seem to quiet down.
Vivian, is something wrong?
Of course not.
Dinner'll be ready in about 20 minutes. Will you be down?
Yes. Yes, I'll be down.
And would you believe it, Vivian? Right in our own mad little group. His wife didn't know a thing about it. Of course, I'm so suspicious by nature, I should have caught on at once. Why, she...
Well, what's the matter, darling?
I'm sorry, Florence. But you'll have to excuse me.
But, darling, your dinner... You haven't even touched the thing.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry, but I'm not feeling very well. I'll be all right in the morning, though. I'll see you then.
Well, whatever you say, Vivian.
All mornings to have bad weather. I'm sure no one will want to come over.
It does look like a storm.
Vivian, what is the matter with you?
Florence, I shouldn't have left Emily.
Oh, so that's it. You've had another spat.
I should go back right now.
Nonsense. You stay right here. That's the trouble with you, Vivian. You're always running back to apologize. Leave Emily alone. She'll get over it.
Oh, but you don't understand, Florence. I've got to talk to Emily. Florence, I want to use the phone, may I?
The phone?
Oh, now, you're not going to call that dragon.
Florence, please.
All right. You know where it is.
Operator?
Operator, my number. Are you trying it?
I'm sorry, but that line is still busy. Would you kindly place your call later?
Busy? You're sure?
Porter 970 is busy, madam.
Oh, very well, thank you.
No luck?
I can't understand why it should be busy.
Oh, darling, nobody ever gets me. My line's always busy.
Yes, but Emily, I can't understand why today of all days her phone should be busy.
I still don't see why anyone should feel obliged to apologize to Emily.
I don't want to apologize, but I've got to speak to her right away.
Well, all right, darling, all right. Try the number again.
Oh, operator.
Operator?
Hello. Would you try my number again, Porter 970?
The circuits to Portertown are busy now, madam. I'm sorry.
Oh,
Vivian, you're working yourself up into a perfect frenzy.
Florence, I just got to drive back home. I've made a terrible mistake.
But you can call later.
No, I can't wait. Emily wasn't feeling very well when I left, and I've got to get back now.
All this sudden solicitude for Emily is a bit baffling. I must say
I... It's more than solicitude, Florence. And I've got to go. I must leave right away.
Leave? But, Vivian, I don't understand. You were going to stay a week.
I know, Florence. Oh, please forgive me. Look, I'll be back. I'll leave my things. But now, I've got to go, Florence. I've got to hurry.
Yes, Vivian. At the moment, all that's on your mind as you drive your gray convertible out onto the road is the fear that you might be too late to right the terrible wrong that you've done, to intercept Emily's package with the poison capsule. As your car races along the slippery road, the full horror of what you've done sweeps over you. You can't believe you actually planned to kill Emily, can you? It's impossible. You keep telling yourself it never happened. Yes. That's what you're thinking as your foot presses down harder on the accelerator. You're concentrating so hard you don't hear the shrill, frantic warning until just before the crash.
It's Ken, darling. Can you hear me?
Ken. Oh. Kenneth.
You're all right now. There was an accident. You're at the hospital.
Accident?
No, easy.
Kenneth, how long have I been here?
You've been unconscious for 24 hours. You kept calling my name. And Emily's. The doctor sent for me.
Where is Emily?
Now, darling, don't you think about Emily. Just...
Kenneth, where is she?
Please, you mustn't excite yourself, darling. Just...
Kenneth, what is it? Where's Emily?
I wasn't going to tell you, but Emily died last night.
You were too late, weren't you, Vivian? Too late to stop the terrible thing you started. And now it's all over. Emily's dead. Later that afternoon, an ambulance is bringing you back to Sedgwick Manor. You think of Kenneth riding in the car ahead. Kenneth still doesn't know, does he, Vivian? He doesn't know that you were responsible for Emily's death. Yes, you've got to tell him, haven't you, about the poison capsule. And you shudder a little to think of the look on his face when he finds out. As he carries you up to your room and places you gently on your bed, you realize you can't delay another moment.
There's something...
Easy now, dear. Better be quiet for now.
Oh, but Ken...
Shh, I'll do the talking. I haven't told you. I heard from Dr. Morris last night. You remember him, don't you?
Yes. Back east, isn't he?
Uh-huh. He called me about the new clinic. Seems he's been giving me quite a build-up to the people sponsoring the project.
What? They're in the east?
Yes, a group of Boston men. Now, Dr. Morris seemed quite certain the clinic would be mine.
But I thought that Emily...
What's this?
Oh, Kenneth, you must listen.
Oh, that must be my call from the coroner's office. They'll tell me the results of the autopsy. Be right back.
Oh, but Ken... Oh.
Hello? Yes? Yes, this is Dr. Morris.
Excuse me, Miss Vivian.
Yes, Bessie. What is it?
I just wanted to know what I should do with this package.
Bessie, where did you get that package?
It just came in the afternoon mail. It's for Miss Emily.
But that's the package I mailed.
Well, the autopsy is just as I thought. Death by natural causes.
Oh, Kenneth, I... Oh, thank heavens. Oh, the package came a whole day late.
Package?
Yes. Oh, Kenneth, that's what I was trying to tell you. I mailed this package.
The postman said he was sorry the package came a day late. But you know what? He said it was your accident, your own car running into the train yesterday, that delayed the mail.
Ready to hear a gory little story entitled Boomerang. And stars Martin Gable in the role of John Keeler. So, hitch up your chair, switch off the lights, and look out.
Help me.
No one heard me. No one came. And in my back, there was a kind of numbness. I screamed, "Ah! Help! Help!" But no one answered. I was utterly alone, helpless, watching my life dripping drop by drop to the floor. Then the blackness closed in. When I regained consciousness, two uniformed patrolmen were bending over me, looking frightened and puzzled.
Suicide, Riley?
Either that or murder.
Their voices seemed to come echoing over an aching void. I wanted to tell them how it had happened. I wanted to tell them about Bill Sloan and Helen and the airplane. I was frantic. I had to tell them.
He's trying to say something, Riley.
Poor guy. He can't talk. He's too far gone.
I couldn't talk. My tongue was thick like cotton. My lips moved, but that was all. It was all shut up inside me. They would never know how it had happened.
Riley, it looks to me like murder.
Murder, yes, it was murder. And if only I could have spoken, I would have told them about my nervous breakdown, about the sanitarium. That's where it began, back there in that plushy prison. I was locked up behind that big wall, and my wife and my partner, they had the chance to discover each other. And then when I came out, the doctor said I was cured. Their false solicitude. And all the while, suspicion was building up inside me. I was already suspicious that day. I caught them by surprise. I'd come directly home from my regular visit to the psychiatrist instead of returning to the office. Bill was there in the living room with Helen, my partner and my wife, laughing together. I closed the front door silently. The rugs muffled my footsteps. I entered the room suddenly, wanting to see their faces when they saw me.
Oh, what, darling.
Hello, Helen.
John, how did you happen to come home in mid-afternoon? Why aren't you at the office?
I was thinking of asking you that question. Bill made some flimsy excuse, but I caught the look of guilt on his face. He was a bachelor, smooth with words, successful with women. And I was beginning to believe he had succeeded with my wife. Oh, I had evidence. There was the time a few nights later. Helen and I were going up to bed. As we passed the umbrella stand at the foot of the stairs, I noticed something. Helen, just a moment. This umbrella, it's Bill's.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is. What's doing here?
Well, he must have forgotten it when he was over the other day. Take it out of the office in the morning, will you, darling?
I made no reply. We continued up the stairs and went to bed. I waited until Helen was asleep, then crept out of bed and down the stairs. There was the umbrella. I reached out my hand, afraid to touch it, but I had to. The umbrella was still wet. It had rained that afternoon. I said nothing about it the next morning. Oh, I was suspicious enough. But I told myself I had to be absolutely sure. And then, that next night, it happened. Helen went out after dinner, saying she had an appointment with her hairdresser. As the door closed behind her, I picked up the phone and dialed the number.
Hello? Crescent Beauty Salon?
Alberta, this is Mr. John Keeler. I'm calling for my wife to verify her appointment for this evening.
Mrs. Keeler? But, monsieur, she has no appointment for this evening.
Now, I was sure. Bill and Helen were together. I struggled to control my emotions. My head was whirling. I felt ill, weak. My heart was pounding in my chest. The room began to spin. First the floor lamp, then the chairs, finally the table whirling around my head. I needed air, air. I forced myself out of my seat, stumbled across the floor to the window, and threw it open. The stars, too, were spinning, chasing each other in a mad race across the sky. I sucked the fresh air into my lungs, and slowly the stars resumed their normal positions. I drew my head back into the room, and then it struck me across the nostrils. Gas. The room was full of gas. Yes, I found one gas jet open in the kitchen stove. I fought against the logical conclusion, struggled against it all that night and into the next day. But I could no longer stand it by mid-afternoon. That open gas jet last night had been no accident. They were planning to have me put out of the way. Well, two could play at that game. I also could commit murder. I worked out a plan. First, the business trip to Buffalo that I'd been putting off for weeks. I could use that as my alibi. I called my secretary.
Yes, Mr. Keeler.
Miss Jackson, I've decided to go up to Buffalo tomorrow. Could you get me a drawing room on the 5 o'clock train?
I'll call the railroad station right now, Mr. Keeler.
A few minutes later, she called me back. I had the train reservation. So far, so good. I went to the bank, and from the bank to the airline terminal.
What can I do for you, sir?
I want a seat on the Rochester plane. The plane that leaves New York at 9:30 tomorrow night.
9:30. What is the name, sir?
Dunham. Roger Dunham.
Well, you're a lucky man, Mr. Dunham. It's the last seat on the plane.
Roger Dunham. That assumed name would prove my alibi. The details of my scheme were falling into place. I went home, and at dinner told Helen I was leaving for Buffalo tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Must you go tomorrow, John? Can't it wait?
I've been putting this trip off too long already. I'll leave straight from the office and come home the next afternoon.
Well, you're being a little inconsiderate. I'll be all alone here overnight.
Oh, come, Helen. You're not afraid of anything, are you?
Afraid? No, but
well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll ask Bill to come over and keep you company tomorrow night. How'll that be?
Why, that'll be fine.
Another cog in place. Another gear meshed. Now one last piece to move and the engine of my revenge would be complete. Yes, it was revenge now. Revenge for what those two had done to me.
Buffalo, eh? It's a good idea, John. The way your trip could combine business with pleasure.
Pleasure?
You've been rather tense lately. The change of the scene will do you worlds of good.
I'm sure it will. How about Helen? Can you make it tonight?
Tonight? Yes, I'll be over after dinner.
That day passed like a dream. With me, the sleepwalker in the center, going through all the motions correctly, but waiting for the evening. For I wasn't hunted now. Now I was the hunter. A little past 4 o'clock that afternoon, I left the office and took a cab to the station. I went directly to my drawing room, and as the train pulled out, I called for the porter.
At midnight, sir?
Just a glass of milk, porter. Warm milk. And don't bring it before midnight. Till then, I've got a lot of work to do, and I don't want to be disturbed.
Just as you see, sir.
I gave the porter an unnecessarily large tip to make sure he'd remember me. Now, when the train stopped to change engines at Harmon an hour later, it was raining, thunderstorming. I pulled my hat down over my eyes, raised my coat collar around my face, and became just another shadowy figure hurrying to get out of the rain. I crossed the platform unnoticed, and 10 minutes later, I was on a train going southbound, returning to New York. I picked up my car at the parking lot and drove out to my house on the cliff. Parking on a side road, I climbed up the hill on foot. By now, the rain was coming down in sheets. Lightning split the sky and thunder crashed around me. I could see the light from my house perched at the edge of the cliff. Now, Bill's car was parked on the driveway, pointed downhill. Light came from the living room. I crept through the shrubbery to a window. There they were, Bill and Helen. My partner and my wife, sitting side by side on the divan. He drinking my whiskey, comfortable and warm, while I, the unwanted, was standing outside in the storm. How I hated him at that moment. I went back to Bill's car, crept beneath it, and went to work. The sound of the storm covered the noise of my tools as I disconnected the brakes. And I was finished. And none too soon, for suddenly the front door opened, and Bill stood framed in the light of the doorway with Helen behind him.
What's the matter,
Bad night for it, but we'll never get another chance like this one, Helen.
Well, all right, but come back quickly, Bill. I'm nervous.
Oh, nothing to be nervous about. John is halfway to Buffalo by now. It's a perfect opportunity to go over our plans with Bates.
All right, go ahead then. But hurry.
I'll have Bates back here in a jiffy.
Bates. He was going to fetch Bates, undoubtedly a hired killer. I laughed inwardly as the car got started. I could see Helen watching it as it picked up speed on the steep downgrades. Something was wrong now, and she knew it.
Bill, not the car!
Too late, too late. The car was roaring downhill out of control, charging toward the lip of the cliff. There was a crash and smash through the car.
Bill! Bill!
He's dead, Helen.
Oh.
It's a sheer drop of 400 feet to the bottom.
John, I thought... John, you said you were going to Buffalo.
I am going to Buffalo, Helen, after I finish my business here.
Well, Bill, the car just...
It was a pity about the brakes. They must have come disconnected.
Disconnected?
Accidents will happen, Helen.
John, you killed him.
You and Bill thought you had pulled the wool over my eyes. Well, I fooled you.
Stay away from me.
I'm going to throw you over the cliff. I'm going to send you to join your lover.
You can't do that.
Tomorrow they'll find your bodies. They'll think you were thrown clear of the car when it crashed. They'll call it an unfortunate accident.
No, no, please.
Careful,
John.
Helen, you're at the edge. There's nothing behind you.
John, don't touch me. John!
Goodbye, Helen. If I had any feeling at that moment, it was a feeling of satisfaction. I, the failure, had committed the perfect crime. My scheme was flawless. I walked down the hill to my car, changed my clothes, and drove to the airport. As Roger Dunham, I boarded the plane for Rochester at 9:30 that night. Just as I'd planned it, we arrived at that city well ahead of my train. I was waiting when the long line of sleeping cars pulled in at the Rochester station platform. I boarded the train. My drawing room was just as I had left it at Harmon. I sank down in a seat, removed my coat and shoes. I looked at my watch. It was midnight. Come in.
Beg pardon, sir. It's midnight, sir.
Oh, midnight? Really? Oh, thanks for bringing the milk.
It's lukewarm, sir, just like you asked for it.
Thank you, porter. In Buffalo, I went to my usual hotel, checked in, went to sleep. Oddly enough, I slept well that night. A deep, dreamless sleep. In fact, I overslept. For when I wakened, it was broad daylight and the phone was ringing. I struggled out of bed, lifted the receiver. Hello.
This is the long-distance operator. I have a New York City call for Mr. John Keeler.
This is Mr. Keeler speaking.
One moment, please. Here's your party.
Mr. Keeler?
Yes?
This is Miss Jackson. I've just arrived at the office. Mr. Keeler, I don't know how to tell you. The police.
What about the police?
They're here in the office. They want you to return at once.
Miss Keeler, what's going on there?
Mr. Sloan and your wife. Both of them are dead, Mr. Keeler.
Dead?
Mr. Sloan's car went off the cliff near your house last night. The accident was discovered this morning.
Accident? You say it was an accident.
It must have been an accident, Mr. Keeler.
She thought it was an accident. Now, if only the police thought likewise. I told my secretary I'd take the first plane back to the city, and I hung up. A few hours later, I reached New York, hurried to my office.
There's a detective waiting in your office, Mr. Keeler.
A detective?
He said he had to see you.
A detective. This was the test. I pulled myself together and opened the door to my office.
Mr. Keeler?
Yes. I understand you're from police headquarters.
Jerome is the name, sir. Assistant Inspector.
How do you do, sir?
We won't take up much of your time, Mr. Keeler. It's an open and shut case.
How do you mean that?
Well, stormy night, slippery road, bad brakes. Obviously an accident. I'm very sorry.
I nodded at the detective, and all the while I was laughing inwardly. He sat there, the very symbol of the law, and offered me official sympathy. No question of clues, nothing overlooked, nothing to fear.
Not now. I, the weakling, had committed the perfect crime. Yes, Miss Jackson?
Mr. Keeler, there's a man out here to see you.
Send him away.
He won't go. He says you don't know him, but it's extremely important.
What's his name?
His name is Bates, Mr. Keeler. William Bates.
Bates. The hired killer. I told my secretary I'd see him. I went into the outer office. Bates was sitting on one of the chairs with an open briefcase on his lap. He was a big man. Tough looking.
I read the news in the morning paper, Mr. Keeler. Too bad. That was a tough break.
Yes. Yes, was.
I didn't know if I should go after you now, but... Well, after all, I'm a businessman. My time is money.
I'm sure it is, but why tell me about it? You certainly don't expect me to pay you.
Why not? They're your plans.
My plans?
Well, look at them. Here they are. Why, they've even got your name on them.
I didn't know whether I could trust my ears. Whether I could believe my vision. Bates drew a roll of architectural drawings out of his briefcase and shoved them at me.
Look at them. There it is in your partner's handwriting. Plans for the new Keeler house.
Who are you?
I told you. My name is Bates. I'm a building contractor. Your partner and your wife insisted that the whole job had to be done in secret.
In secret?
They said something about you having just come out of a sanitarium. They wanted the whole thing to be a big surprise.
My mind was reeling. The secret meetings that led me to suspect Bill and Helen. Those meetings were to go over the plans for a house. My house and Helen's. I had killed my best friend and my wife. Inspector Jerome, I want to confess. I killed them. I killed them.
Killed them? Killed who?
Don't look at me like that. You know who I'm talking about. My partner and my wife. I killed them last night. Now I'm ready to take my punishment.
Well, calm down, Mr. Keeler. You've had a hard time. We realize this thing has been a great shock.
What are you talking about?
The homicide squad doesn't jump to hasty conclusions, Mr. Keeler. We've made a thorough checkup on your background.
What's my background got to do with it?
Well, we know you spent 3 months in a sanatorium recuperating from a nervous collapse. Now, on top of that, this unfortunate accident.
It wasn't an accident. I killed him.
We checked every movement you made since you left the office yesterday.
Then you must know.
We know you took the 5 o'clock train to Buffalo. Porter on your Pullman had no trouble recalling you. Why, he even told us how he brought you a glass of milk at midnight. You were a good 200 miles away from New York when the accident happened.
The detective went away, shaking his head. Sympathetically. My mind was in a turmoil. I had committed the perfect crime, and it had boomeranged. I went home. The house on the cliff was empty. Everywhere I looked, I saw Helen. Her photograph on my desk. A red-tipped cigarette still in the ashtrays. 2 half-empty cocktail glasses side by side on the living room table. There was desolation in the house. Emptiness. Loneliness. And it would be like this for the rest of my life. But there was one way out. I always kept a loaded gun in the desk. I took it out of the drawer and in my hand. Here was my punishment. This time I couldn't fail. I placed the gun against my chest and pulled the trigger. I fell by the desk and lay there, where I am now. Staining the carpet with my blood. I was dying, and I was glad of it. And then I remembered the plane. The plane reservation to Rochester. I could tell the police when they came, and they could check that, and they would know that I was guilty. But they came too late. They bent over me. I tried to tell them. I tried.
Riley, he's trying to say something.
Yeah. Cool guy. He's too far gone to talk.
Now I'm lying here on the carpet, waiting to die, with my guilt locked up inside me. I can see a new figure among the police, a man in civilian dress with a small black bag in his hand.
How long is it since this man was discovered in this condition, officer?
About half an hour, Doc.
He's in very bad shape.
Will he live, Doc? Will he recover?
Oh, yes. He may recover, but only partially.
Partially? How do you mean, Doc?
Notice his inability to move so much as a finger. Notice how only his lips move, trying to form words without being able to speak. The bullet must have injured his spinal cord. This man is paralyzed. Totally paralyzed.
So now I know. I'm paralyzed. I'm not going to die. And yet I can see the policemen moving carefully about the room. And I hear them speaking softly as one speaks in the presence of the dead. So I've failed again. For the last time. Because I know my fate now. To live in this living death. Alone with my guilt. Forever. That is my punishment.
When you attend this party, you'll all be treated right. But there's a wild and woolly woman you boys can invite. You can bring Pearl, she's a darn nice girl, but don't bring Lulu. You can bring Rose with the turned up nose, but don't bring Lulu. Lulu always wants to do what we boys don't want her to. When she struts her stuff around, the bridge is falling down. You can bring cake or a porterhouse steak, but don't bring Lulu. Lulu gets blue when she goes cuckoo, like the clock upon the shelf. She's the kind of smarty who breaks up every party. Hullabaloo, don't bring Lulu.
I'll bring her myself.
Charleston, and how the boys did stare. But when she did the hula hula, then she got the air. You can bring Nan with the old deadpan, but don't bring Lulu. You can bring Tess with her no and yes, but don't bring Lulu. Lulu has the reddest hair, redder here and redder there. How can we boys keep our heads? Bulls go wild when they see red. You can bring peas and crawler and cheese, but don't bring Lulu. Give her two beers and she tears poor tears and she throws cups off the shelf. When she loves with feeling, the boys all hit the ceiling. Hullabaloo. Don't bring Lulu.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.